Support for WILL comes from Urbana's Market at the Square, happening every Saturday morning, rain or shine, from 7 a.m. to noon at the corner of Illinois and Vine Streets in historic downtown Urbana. Learn more at urbanaillinois.us/market.
You're listening to WILL AM 580. Looking at your Champaign-Urbana weather, today it's going to be mostly sunny with a high around 80. Tonight, it will become cloudy with a low of 60 degrees and light southeast winds. By tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high of 82 expected. We're going to see some moderately strong winds with southbound winds of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday night, showers and thunderstorms are expected with a low of 68 to 70% chance of rain. By Sunday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Again, 70% chance of rain going into Monday. By Monday, we're expecting a high in the lower 80s. And by Thursday of next week, we should see the rain having dissipated with highs next week in the lower 60s. With lows, rather, in the lower 60s and highs in the lower 80s. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
You're listening to WILL. Today, Man of Steel, the latest Superman movie, is opening in theaters across the country. Much of the film was shot in Chicago, a stand-in for the comic book's fictional big city of Metropolis. But some folks downstate are taking issue with that. For more than 40 years now, the town of Metropolis, Illinois, has officially been the home of Superman. What's it like to have the square-jawed superhero for a neighbor? Well, mild-mannered reporter Michael Puente was sent to find out.
Every year, more than 30,000 superfans come to this small city along the Ohio River for one reason and one reason alone, to celebrate the big guy in the blue tights and the red cape.
This is my third time here. I wish I could come every year, but it's expensive to come from Australia every year.
Back in Sydney, Steve Eunice runs one of the largest Superman websites in the world. But in Metropolis, at the 35th annual Superman celebration, he's just another fan. You can find Superman everywhere here, on billboards, in drugstores, even on the badges of the Metropolis police force.
I just think everybody needs a hero, and people always look for that. Troubled times, and people need some happiness in their lives, and they escape with Superman. I think it's great.
That's Michael Rosenbaum. He played Superman's nemesis, Lex Luthor, in the TV series Smallville. He was in town last week for the celebration. In reality, Metropolis is a lot more like Smallville than the big city in the comic books. Then again, who's to say this Metropolis isn't Superman's Metropolis? Just listen to this old TV episode.
Hello, Jim. Come on in.
How'd you know it was me?
Don't you know that I have X-ray vision?
Oh, sure. Just like Superman.
That's right. What's on your mind beside the Chicago White Sox?
You guessed it.
You playing tonight?
Yeah.
Okay, you got a date.
Hot dog.
Granted, the guy can fly, but it's a lot easier to catch a White Sox game when you live in Illinois.
Too bad Miss Lane's on vacation. She wanted to see the Sox play, too.
The bottom line is, if you want to visit Superman's hometown, you got to go to Metropolis, Illinois.
Well, you've been here long enough. What is it like to live in the hometown of Superman?
Boring. Not a lot of action here. There's Superman almost got nothing to do. He sits around all day.
Actually, he stands around all day with a clenched jaw 16 feet high in front of the county courthouse. But resident Eric Phillips has a point. Metropolis would be an even sleepier town without the Man of Steel.
You can walk up here at the courthouse any day, and there's somebody having their picture taken with a Superman statue.
Of course, Metropolis, Illinois was around long before Superman, 1839 to be exact. At the time, the city's founders envisioned a large transportation hub that would develop into a major metropolis. But those illusions of grandeur never materialized. Factories closed, people moved away, and by the early 70s, Metropolis was anything but. That's when the town got a little help.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
somebody suggested that Metropolis take advantage of its name and push to be Superman's official hometown. DC Comics signed off on the idea, and so did the Illinois legislature.
Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
But longtime resident Sue Barfield says the idea was kryptonite to some folks.
We had a lot of naysayers. When we had our first Superman statue at the square, we had a lot of people make a lot of fun of it.
Still, some credit Superman with saving this struggling town. Metropolis Mayor Billy McDaniel goes even further than that.
We strive, you know, to operate our city as just what it says, truth, justice, and in every way. We try to raise our kids the same way, that integrity, how you treat your neighbor, how you treat other people is important in your life. We don't all agree on everything, but I can tell you, when something happens, you forget your differences and you help each other.
For example, in 2011, we had the worst flooding that Metropolis has seen in a long time. And you had community members out sandbagging and pulling together. So, I mean, I think people really are super.
Michelle Longworth is a longtime journalist for the local newspaper. You guessed it, the Metropolis Planet.
When we get phone calls, you know, people always ask, well, where's Clark? Where's Lois? And we always say they're on assignment.
And like her counterpart Lois Lane, Longworth says there are days when she could use Clark Kent's help.
Like the time I took a wrong turn trying to go take some pictures and cover a story and ended up in the middle of a cornfield and with my Mustang. Sometimes I wish there was a real-life Superman to come and rescue me.
During my stay in Metropolis, I talked to several people who actually think Superman could be doing more for the town than just standing around.
I think there should be an amusement park. I think there should be a lot of developmental things. I think it would have been a gold mine for Metropolis. Much better than a riverboat.
That's Pam Turner, who was having lunch at Rube's Diner. But according to city officials, their hands are tied. They say DC Comics tightly controls anything having to do with the man with the S on his chest. On the other hand, her mother, Lorene McGinnis, could hardly care less about Superman, the statue, or anything else.
I'll soon be 89 years old, and I've been to it twice. I went home, ain't been back.
McGinnis says with a riverboat casino in town, Superman's high ideals aren't doing much good anyway.
It's Sin City.
Have you gone to that gambling ship?
You want me to smack you?
I'm sorry. I was just wondering. It's a big tourist. Well, you feel like there's just too much vice going around town now?
I feel like our young people have got too much of the devil's playground in Metropolis.
Well, that actually does sound like a job for Superman. But for now, residents have other things to worry about, like where to see the new movie. When Man of Steel opens today, folks in Metropolis will have to travel across the river to Kentucky to watch it. That's because the city's only movie theater closed decades ago. The last movie shown here?
Easy, miss. I've got you.
You've got me! Who's got you?
That's right, Superman. Reporting from Metropolis, Clark Kent, Michael Puente.
It's Michael Puente reporting for WILL. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine. Now for In My Backyard. Whether in insects can influence what we have to eat locally during the growing season, Lisa Brault discovers that while they're two very different issues that farmers must wrangle with, they're much more closely related than she realized.
Recently, I found myself thinking about the weather even more in terms of how it relates to growing food, since the winter was so mild and everything was growing so fast and early. Because fretting about the weather isn't enough, I started pondering another factor that can influence what's available to eat locally during our growing season. Bugs.
First thing that's going to happen, it's everything will be a little earlier than it usually is. Doesn't necessarily mean more abundant, but earlier.
That's Dr. Rick Weinzierl, professor in the Department of Crop Sciences at the University of Illinois, as well as a U of I extension specialist. His area of expertise is insects, specifically those that cause problems for specialty crop growers, farmers who grow fruits and vegetables. He and his team set traps for insects in their research orchard just south of Urbana to learn more about what's here and when it's here. but they also pay attention to the weather. They operate their own weather station at the orchard and use data from the Illinois Water Survey and other agencies. They do this for a lot of reasons, but one is because insects, when they migrate, often migrate in on weather systems.
They move in on weather systems, and that seems a little funny to people to say we've just received insects from Louisiana or Texas or the Gulf Coast. It's not like they use their own muscles to fly 500 miles or 1,000 miles. They simply rise up into weather systems, and they move with the weather fronts, and they drop out when the front hits a boundary. In the same way as we get thunderstorms, we have insects drop out of those weather systems.
I had no idea. I wondered, is it possible in some way to predict the arrival of certain types of insects? It actually is. One migrant species we've all seen at farmers markets or in the garden is the corn earworm, the worm you sometimes see in the tip of an ear of sweet corn after you start shucking. That bug doesn't survive the winter here very well, but it comes to us instead on weather systems from Texas and Louisiana. When it arrives makes all the difference to a sweet corn farmer. If it arrives in June, that farmer will have to intervene to keep the numbers down. If it arrives in August, it's not likely you'll find worms in your locally grown sweet corn. So it's definitely in farmers' interest to see which way the corn earworms are blowing, so to speak. Meteorologists and entomologists are helping them figure it out.
They make predictions that, you know, the likelihood of corn earworm emergence is low, and it will be low 80% of the time, but 20% of the time it will be, if populations are moving, then the likelihood of something happening is pretty high. And out of those, maybe only a quarter of those predictions will be right. But they do tell people, be attentive. And if you're attentive and nothing happens, it's probably no different than a tornado warning. We'd rather have a few false positives than negatives.
Professor Weinzierl told me that the insects that cause the biggest problems for our local farmers like hot, dry weather. So he thinks it's possible, but not probable, that insects could be more than a nuisance for the area's small farmers. Chances are pretty good that your favorites at local markets will not be obviously affected by insects. See, other strange insect plagues, like the dark-winged fungus gnat infestation earlier this spring, or the infamous soybean aphid swarm of late summer 2008, that might become a bother if the weather conditions are just right at the right time in the insect's development. He did assure me, however, that it won't be a massive cloud of grasshoppers like the ones Laura Ingalls Wilder described in her book On the Banks of Plum Creek. Rocky Mountain locusts died out for reasons no one knows exactly in the early 1900s. One less insect to fret about. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
In My Backyard airs on WILL on Fridays on Morning Edition.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, June 14, 2013. It's Flag Day. It was on June 14, 1777, that the Second Continental Congress approved the Stars and Stripes as the flag of the United States, with a star for each state and 13 red and white stripes to commemorate the original 13 colonies. Of course, in 1777, there were only 13 states, 13 stars, and their arrangement was not consistent. Sometimes the stars were in a circle, sometimes in rows, and on a few occasions, the stars appeared in the shape of a star. Our current incarnation of the flag has been around since 1960 with Hawaii's admission to the Union, and in the event that Puerto Rico is officially made a state, there are already some 51 star designs in the works. It's the birthday of Ernesto Che Guevara. As a young man, he took off a year from college, traveled around South America by motorcycle with a friend, and recorded his adventures in a journal, later became his book, The Motorcycle Diaries. He was disturbed by all the poverty and oppression he saw there among the Indian people of Latin America, and he came to believe that the only solution was violent revolution. So after graduating from medical school in 1953, he met the Castro brothers, Raul and Fidel, in Mexico and joined them in their plan to overthrow the Batista dictatorship in Cuba. Their forces landed in Cuba in November 1956 and were almost wiped out by Batista's army. The survivors fled to the mountains, formed a guerrilla army, which eventually overthrew Batista and established a Marxist government. As Castro's right-hand man, Che Guevara held several top government posts. He visited New York to speak at the United Nations as the head of the Cuban delegation. He appeared on Face the Nation and traveled all over the world. He was ill-suited, though, for diplomatic work, his nature being confrontational and uncompromising. Later, in Bolivia, while leading a guerrilla army against the Bolivian regulars, a glimmer of his medical calling remained. He treated and released enemy soldiers, but eventually he was captured and executed.